Yesterday, Governor Rauner vetoed a bill that requires gun dealers to get a state license. Here he is on radio station WJPF.
I have decided that I am vetoing that bill. It's unnecessary, burdensome regulation. It's redundant on top of existing federal regulations. It's crushing to our small business owners and creates bureaucracy that really doesn't help keep our communities safer.
Meanwhile, students across the country are continuing their push for more gun control. Today, many will walk out of their schools in protest, including Lily Hammer from Deerfield.
My generation is often criticized for being obsessed with our phones and technology and not being aware of what's going on, but it's our generation that is speaking up.
Plus, even though incidences of anti-Semitism have gone down over the decades, that number increased dramatically last year. We'll talk about what's behind that trend and how to stop it. That's all coming up this hour on the 21st. Stay tuned. The latest news is next. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Today marks 1 month since the mass shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. Since then, students from all over the country, including Illinois, have rallied in support of stronger gun control. And this morning, all across our state, from Chicago to Collinsville, students are making themselves heard by walking out of their classrooms in protest. There are even some lawmakers in Springfield who walked out in solidarity with these young people. Later in the hour, we're going to hear more from two students about what they're hoping to achieve. Over the past few weeks, lawmakers have taken up several bills designed to increase gun control. They include measures like banning bump stocks and restricting access to assault-style weapons for people aged 21 and older. One bill made it to the governor's desk. It would have required gun dealers to get a license from the state, but yesterday, Governor Rauner officially vetoed that bill. Do you have thoughts on this issue of licensing gun dealers or what you think needs to happen or not happen in regards to guns in Illinois? Give us a call. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. You can tweet your comments or thoughts as well to 21STShow. NPR Illinois' Daisy Contreras has been covering this and joins us now from the State House. Hi, Daisy. Welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for being here.
Hi. Thanks for having me again.
Can you tell us about this bill? What would it have done if the governor had chosen to sign it?
Yeah, as you mentioned earlier, this would have required gun stores to have a license with the state. The licensing fees would be no more than $1,000 over 5 years. Those backing the proposal say this would have helped keep guns away from the wrong people, those who shouldn't be having guns, essentially making dealers accountable.
And to correct me if I'm wrong, Daisy, so right now there are no state regulations for licensing gun dealers in the state of Illinois.
That's correct. Yeah, there are none.
And Governor Rauner broke the news about this yesterday on the Morning News Watch on WJPF in Southern Illinois. Let's hear what he had to say there about why he wasn't signing this.
I have decided that I am vetoing that bill. I'm going to veto the bill. It's just not right. It's unnecessary, burdensome regulation. It's redundant on top of existing federal regulations. It's crushing to our small business owners and creates bureaucracy that really doesn't help keep our communities safer. I am going to veto that gun store bill that got sent to my desk.
That's Governor Rauner on WJPF yesterday. Hours later, Daisy, the governor put out a very lengthy statement explaining a little bit more about why he vetoed this bill. What did he say?
I mean, he kind of bounced off from that earlier. He said this was burdensome, especially since gun shops are already being licensed by the federal government. It would be bad for these small gun shops to maybe not a lot of them would be able to afford an extra layer of regulation. Now he's calling on lawmakers to figure out a different way to fix the issue. He's asking them to form a so-called legislative public safety group and work with the administration and develop other legislative ideas that wouldn't be as burdensome as the one he vetoed.
How many other states have laws like this, Stacey?
I mean, other states do have legislation like this, and they vary. One that I know of right now is California. They have a variation in their laws. Some require staff to be specifically licensed by the state, each of them individually. They require extensive background checks and an extensive reporting of the guns that are sold at any time. These states want to make sure that when firearms are stolen or lost, that there is a system in place to track them. And this is what some Illinois lawmakers wanted as well.
So State Senator Don Harmon, among other Democrats, he was very upset about this yesterday. He accused the governor of vetoing this bill in order to shore up political support before the primary on Tuesday. Governor Rauner is facing a Republican opponent, State Representative Jeannie Ives. And obviously she voted against this measure. What happens next? Because, Daisy, I understand Senator Harmon said he would try to see if he had the votes to override the governor's veto.
Right. Yeah. Senator Harmon did say that he will continue to fight to make sure the General Assembly overrides that veto. Now, they're working on a tight deadline here. The Senate will not be back until the second week of April. Next week, as you mentioned, we have the primary. So Senator Harmon did express that he thinks Governor Rauner is just making sure he has those votes secured for next week. So it'll be interesting to see how this ends up playing out. Today, the Senate is possibly taking up other gun measures and maybe even the override.
What other measures are they taking up today?
Well, you mentioned earlier one of them will be to ban bump stocks and another one to extend the waiting period to buy assault-style rifles and to have a little bit more regulation restricting the access to assault-style weapons for people 21 and over.
Daisy, of course, as we're talking about this, as students an hour ago were walking out of their classrooms in protest of what they see as overly permissive gun laws, I noticed earlier you tweeted a picture of different lawmakers. What did some lawmakers do in the Capitol earlier today?
Yeah, so about at 10 a.m. this morning, Democratic lawmakers walked out in solidarity with those students. For 20 minutes, they spoke about some of the victims from the Parkland shooting. They held up their pictures, said a little bit of what each student liked to do while they were still alive. And they even included Chicago Police Commander Paul Bauer in their moment of silence as well. If we recall, he was also killed over gun violence in Chicago a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was off duty, if I recall correctly. Daisy Contreras is a reporter for NPR Illinois. You can look out for her reporting on this NPR station later this afternoon as to what happens today in the State House. Daisy, thanks for being with me. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Yesterday, three Central Illinois men were charged by federal authorities with arson for an incident involving a pipe bomb that was thrown into a Minnesota mosque. It's one of many hate crimes we've been seeing, unfortunately, on the rise in the United States. Today, we're going to focus on anti-Semitic incidents in particular. That's because, unfortunately, in Illinois alone, the number of anti-Semitic incidents has more than tripled since 2015. Last year, the Jewish community in our state faced bomb threats, vandalism, harassment, and violence. That's according to new data from the Anti-Defamation League. The ADL also reports that nearly 2,000 incidents against Jewish people in our country last year is the second highest number the ADL has ever seen. I'm joined now by Lonnie Nassiter. He's the regional director of Upper Midwest Greater Chicago Region of the Anti-Defamation League. He's based in Chicago. Hi, Lonnie. Thanks for being with me.
Hi, Nala. Nice to be here.
Rabbi Alan Cook is the rabbi at Sinai Temple in Champaign. He's with us in our Urbana studios. Rabbi Cook, welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for being here as well.
Thank you so much for having me.
Lonnie, can I start with you? Maybe we should just begin with the basics and how you all define these incidents.
Sure. So we've been doing this kind of audit for well over 35 years, and it's an opportunity for us to just give a snapshot of what we're seeing in terms of anti-Semitic incidents throughout the country. The ADL has 26 regional offices throughout the country, and that really is kind of a depository for a lot of this information. And at the end of the year, we put it all together in a report, and we really kind of put it into three different categories. And by the way, each time we hear of an incident, we do our own due diligence to make sure that it's legitimate and it's been, you know, appropriately corroborated by those that have been a part of it. But we break it down into harassment, vandalism, and assault.
So they're not necessarily, I guess some of them, there are incidents and then there are hate crimes, and you're including both of these in there, right? It sounds like.
That's exactly right. Some of these incidents don't, you know, rise to the level of a criminal offense. Some do. For example, assault most likely will, as will vandalism, but sometimes harassment doesn't rise to that level. So we do, it's a more all-inclusive type of audit than just hate crimes per se.
Rabbi Cook, I know in the Champaign-Urbana area on the U of I campus, there's been repeated incidents with a menorah that keeps getting knocked over in front of one of the Jewish community centers. I wondered to just if that's, I don't know if you or anyone in your community has had to deal directly with incidents like this.
Of course, when an incident like that happens, it's certainly disturbing and upsetting. That happened at the Chabad Center on the U of I campus. Thankfully, Sinai Temple itself has not encountered any such vandalism. But certainly, overall in our community, because we do try to function as one Jewish community, we are concerned anytime that we do learn of these incidents. And the campus community, as much as it gives students in particular an opportunity to explore their politics, their interests, and so forth, the campus community also lends itself, unfortunately, to occasionally having these incidents. And that does reverberate in the broader community.
Mm. Lonnie, can you, I mentioned the numbers of the 2017 mm-hmm. data in the introduction. Can you give us some more specifics about what we saw in Illinois in particular?
Yeah, sure. So in Illinois, for example, we saw a significant increase from what we saw in previous years. So just to kind of give you an indication, just this last year we had 20 cases of harassment, 7 of vandalism for about 27, and about half of those took place last year. That was just in the first quarter. So we're looking at almost double the amount of incidents that we've seen in Illinois from 16 to 17. And when it comes to the upper Midwest, which represents 6 states, we saw over a 100% increase in terms of incidents.
And are there how does Illinois compare to other states in the Midwest when it comes to data, Lonnie? I imagine because of Chicago and the population center, I don't know if that makes a difference.
No, sure. Quite frankly, we're kind of on the lower side of some of the bigger regions like New York, Florida, for example, Los Angeles are reporting bigger numbers than us. But, we are unfortunately still in the top tier.
Rabbi Cook, do you think anti-Semitism manifests itself differently outside of big cities like Chicago? What's your experience?
I think that what we're looking at is a general feeling in the 21st century that one can express oneself even if those opinions are derogatory to other groups, that this great American melting pot has devolved into a feeling of silos again. I think that anti-Semitism intersects with Islamophobia, intersects with homophobia, intersects with a lot of other hatred that we're seeing that has been emboldened in recent months and years. I think that, we see it in a different way in larger cities, possibly because some of our institutions of Judaism, of Islam, et cetera, are more visible in the larger cities. But I think we still have to be vigilant even in our more far-flung communities.
Lonnie, how much do you think technology and social media plays any part in this as well?
Well, I think it does play a part, especially when it comes to issues of harassment. Some of our audit are situations where the harassment is being done through social media. Obviously, assault and vandalism take place outside of that realm, and so they actually happen in real life to real people and real institutions. But also in terms of just the ability to freely spread hate and propagate hate is increased with the access that people have to all different types of sites and social media platforms. And so, people that are on the fringes of society that have this type of vitriol are able to really kind of get it out in a way they couldn't 20 years ago. The old-fashioned ways of, sending flyers by the KKK or white supremacist groups, while they still exist to this day, and in fact we've seen an uptick even in that, they now have another route to spread their hate, and that's through the internet and through social media.
And when we talk about laws, particularly in Illinois, Lonnie, hate crimes have been getting a lot of attention in our state. In August of 2017, Governor Rauner did sign new hate crime legislation. Attorney General Lisa Madigan also helped create House Bill 3711, which would add cyberstalking, stalking, and intimidation to offenses considered hate crimes. Do you feel like legally we're doing enough in Illinois?
Yeah, in Illinois, we actually have a really robust hate crime statute. So from a strictly legal perspective, when it comes to hate crimes, and you know, ADL has been a prime architect of a lot of these laws throughout the country, and in fact, here in Illinois as well. So in terms of our hate crime laws, it is robust. It has significant protected categories. We have gender identity. We have sexual orientation, disability. So that's good. And now by this, what you just mentioned, the latest law in terms of adding the cyber component, again, kind of keeps us at the cutting edge in terms of legislation. But, you know, more should be done and can be done by elected officials. I believe that there's never a time when an elected official shouldn't take that bully pulpit and speak out against hate whenever it happens in his or her community. You know, the ability for law enforcement to also play a role once they investigate a hate crime, and this is part of the training that ADL does, is to really emphasize to law enforcement officers that, yes, you have to tend to the victim of a hate crime, but it's also the community that's been impacted by that particular hate crime. So law enforcement has gotten a lot better, and they are very attentive to our training kind of desires. And so there's a lot of different elements to this to try to create an environment that's really kind of a hate-free zone, so to speak. And, of course, schools. That's one thing that we didn't get to mention, and that is that we saw a really alarming rate of school incidents. In fact, double the rate of school incidents from last year from our report. And
wow.
So unfortunately.
Yeah, Lonnie, yeah, we're going to have to take a break, but let's get sure. into that after the break. Lonnie Nassiter is with us. He's the regional director for the Upper Midwest, the Greater Chicago region of the Anti-Defamation League. Rabbi Alan Cook is with us as well. He's the rabbi of Sinai Temple in Champaign. As always, you're welcome to join us with your tweets or comments. You can tweet to 21STShow. You can give us a call at 1-800-222-9455. We'll continue this conversation on the other side of the break. Thanks for tuning in to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the rise in anti-Semitic incidents in Illinois. Since 2015, incidents in our state have more than tripled. My guests are Lonnie Nassiter. He's the regional director of the Upper Midwest Greater Chicago region of the Anti-Defamation League. Rabbi Alan Cook is in our Urbana studios with us. He's the rabbi at Sinai Temple in Champaign. Lonnie, just before the break, you were talking about a rise in incidents in schools. Are we talking about university campuses, high schools,
both? So we're talking about grammar, middle, high school, and then and college as well. And in both of those, you know, kind of venues, we've seen an increase from 16 to 17, significant increase. So from K to 12, we saw a 94% jump from 16 to 17 in terms of a 94% increase. That's significant. And on college campuses, we saw an increase of 89% from 16 to 17. So, you know, it is kind of permeating down to young people. And that's one of our biggest concerns, is that we now have to be really vigilant with young people to stop this really dangerous trend. And so we are very focused on doing a lot more of our anti-bias programs in schools that have been impacted. I can tell you my team in the Midwest have been working as hard as ever to meet the demands of all these schools that need our help.
Rabbi Cook, what do you say to the youngest members of your congregation and to everyone, whether it's in response to how to respond to anti-Semitic incidents and also just to how to create a better culture where these things don't happen?
I hope that we're creating a culture of love, whether we see these incidents firsthand or whether we're, you know, just seeing them on the national scene. when, you know, adults in leadership are emboldened to use either overt anti-Semitism or to use code words like elitist and globalist in detrimental reference to Jews, it is, as Monty said, going to trickle down to our young people. But I'm heartened by the fact that I know that our students are not born hating. I know that, you know, on my way to the studio today, I drove by one of our local high schools and saw kids of all colors and orientations and ethnic backgrounds marching, you know, in support of this walkout in support of ending gun violence. And so I know that you know, kids can be colorblind and can be blind to differences and can embrace one another. And we keep trying to promote that within the synagogue. I know my colleagues across various faiths, clergy colleagues across various faiths, are working with their own populations to encourage the same. And I'm hopeful that the youth will be the leadership on this.
Lonnie, Rabbi Cook mentioned leaders, and I wanted to play some audio of President Trump to get your thoughts. This is him speaking last year after the Charlottesville incidents and the Unite the Right rally.
What about the alt-left that came charging at the, as you say, the alt-right? Do they have any semblance of guilt? You had a group on one side that was bad, and you had a group on the other side that was also very violent. And nobody wants to say that, but I'll say it right now.
That audio is from WTTW. Lonnie, as working for an organization like the ADL, whose mission is to try to stem the growth and reach of hate groups, what's your reaction to the president who's seemingly been unable to condemn neo-Nazis as a hate group?
Yeah, and we were out publicly, as was I and several of my colleagues throughout the country, and saying that that was a serious failure. The president to not unequivocally, you know, condemn anti-Semitism. And, you know, the point of the matter is, as the president of the United States, you have the ultimate bully pulpit. And it's, you know, to use a sports analogy, it's a layup, right? It's, you see Nazis marching, screaming that Jews will not replace us, blood and soil, references to Nazi Germany. And the president equivocates and goes back and forth and says there are good people on both sides. We saw that as a real failure of leadership, and again, really emboldening those groups like white supremacists and the alt-right to continue to feel like they have somebody in the White House that kind of has their back. And as a result, we've seen them louder and stronger than ever before, and it's a real concern. So, you know, we are asking the president anytime he can to unequivocally denounce these extremists. We're asking other elected officials to do the same thing. The minute they see an opening, they get further emboldened and bad things happen.
I wanted to ask both of you just about the third congressional district in Chicago. That's in suburban Chicago. The seat's currently held by Dan Lipinski. Yeah. His opponent, Marie Newman, has been making headlines because she's presenting what many are saying is a viable challenge to him as on the Democratic side. But on the Republican side, the candidate is a neo-Nazi and a Holocaust denier. He's on the ballot. Lonnie, Rabbi Cook, both of you. Lonnie, let's start with you. How alarming is this to you?
Well, it's alarming in the sense that, you know, he will probably now get the nod and go up in a general election against the Democratic challenger. And he is, you know, a self-avowed neo-Nazi Holocaust denier, has been at this for a long time, loves the fact that he now has attention. You know, we'd love to kind of have him not get this attention and be further marginalized. But now he feels like he has a forum to address his vile, vile anti-Semitism and other racist ideology as well. You know, a lot of these people don't just have anti-Semitism in their hearts, but they have other forms of racism as well. So, you know, somebody like that is someone that we are concerned with in terms of his ideology. And you just hope that, you know, people will kind of look through that and be able to see that kind of vile ideology is not something that America represents.
Rabbi Cook, we just have a few minutes left. I just want to leave the last word to you and just ask you, as you, I'm sure there are many people who are listening who are mortified by all of this and wondering what they can do. I just wanted to ask what your advice is to everyone who's listening as they're hearing about these incidents?
Well, I've had the honor previously now of appearing on the 21st with you wearing my other hat in the community, which is as chair of the Interfaith Alliance of Champaign County. And I'm pleased to be able to work with partners of various faiths to try to come together and create understanding and build bridges. And I think that is an important component moving forward. If you're mortified by this from an anti-Semitic perspective, recognize that, yes, you should be mortified, but also recognize, even if you're not Jewish, that anti-Semitism is not that far off from homophobia, from Islamophobia, from denigrating people because of their socioeconomic status. And so if you see any kind of hate, it's important to speak up before it snowballs and before it escalates into a form of hate that will directly impact you. And so the more that we can come together and find commonalities, maybe, you know, you can say that I'm too much kumbaya and rose-colored glasses and so forth, but I think that's important. Only when Americans who feel that this is wrong unite together across these lines can we really make a difference and stem the tide of this.
That's Rabbi Alan Cook. He's rabbi of Sinai Temple in Champaign. I want to thank Lonnie Nassiter for being with us as well. He's regional director for the Upper Midwest Greater Chicago Region of the Anti-Defamation League. Gentlemen, thanks for being with me.
Thank you.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
You're listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Today's March 14th, or 314, with diligent math students know, is also as the number pi, 3.14159, and so on. And so it's become a custom on March 14th to celebrate Pi Day. And what's a celebration without food, right? Bakeries around the state have been kneading and rolling in preparation for that other kind of pie, the kind we like to eat with the buttery, flaky crust, or maybe you're more of a graham cracker crust fan. We're going to get into that in a second. But first, let me welcome two pie mavens to help us celebrate Pi Day. Paula Haney is with me here at our Evanston studio at Northwestern University's McGill School of Journalism. She's the owner of Hoosier Mama Pie Company, which has locations in Evanston and Chicago. Hi, Paula. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And on the line from Rockford is Kate Sullivan from Kate's Pie Shop, the world's pie and vinyl shop in North America. Hi, Kate. I bet it's a busy day for you, too. Happy Pie Day, both of you.
Yeah.
So, Paula, you brought some pie here.
I did, yes.
So I'm thankful that you did not show up without pie. I'm anxious to try. But before, Kate, I have to ask you, pie and vinyl records? How did you bring those two together?
Right. Well, I just combined my two favorite round things, I guess. my husband and I always wanted to open a record store, and we just sort of thought, well, you know, I was working on pie recipes at the time. It was a slap to the forehead, like, oh, I know, pie shop. It'd be great to combine something, a little fusion business. And where else can you get a nice old-fashioned pie but with a nice old-fashioned record, I guess?
Bob, now for both of you, Paula, Hoosier Mama opened in 2009. I wonder how big is Pi Day when it compares to Thanksgiving and all of these other holidays?
Pi Day is huge. It's also our anniversary. This is our 10th Pi Day.
Congratulations.
We opened our shop in Chicago on Pi Day. And Pi Day is second only to Thanksgiving as our busiest day of the
year.
For you too, Kate?
Oh, exactly, yeah.
Kate, what are people ordering for you today in Rockford?
You know, we're doing a lot of banana cream and French silk and, you know, apple cherry blueberry. Strawberry rhubarb is our bestseller. It's a really classic Midwest pie. You know, just kind of all the classics. We're filling up the pie case with chicken pot pies, too, so... Yeah, it's just slamming busy.
And what pies, Kate, what's your most popular pie for you all?
Probably our strawberry rhubarb. Also, you know, we do a Kentucky Derby that I call the Buzzsaw Bourbon, which has been really popular.
Wow, what's that? Is that like a chess pie? What's in that?
It's like a chess. No, it's more like a pecan pie with chocolate and bourbon. It is a Kentucky Derby pie, but I make mine a little bit more buttery, a little less sugary, and a lot more bourbon-y.
Wow. Okay. Paula, what about you?
First of all, I want to say I love that you know chess pie. This is a real pie conversation.
I'm a baker, so yes, this is a real pie conversation.
Our most popular pie is always apple. And today it's been chocolate cream. We just can't keep it in the shop.
That's interesting. And do you think, Paula, do people, when it's warmer, do people want, when it's colder, do people want different kind of pies than when it's warmer? Like, it's kind of cold today here in Chicago.
Well, we bake seasonally, so we definitely get a lot more fruit pies in the summertime. But yeah, we do see that. Like, the cream pies, the comfort pies, when it's cold and dark out, people need that.
Yeah. And now that the time has changed, you can switch to lighter pies.
Yes. Absolutely.
What did you bring today? This looks delicious.
Well, today I brought you a couple of our more non-traditional pies. I brought a pear fig with walnut crumble and our peanut butter and jelly pie.
Wow. Okay. So I'm going to grab some of these. As we try this, which one should I try first?
Try the peanut butter and jelly.
I try the peanut butter and jelly. As I try the peanut butter and jelly, can we talk about crust? What's the crust of this pie?
This is our standard all butter flaky pie crust.
And Kate, do you have a preference for pie crusts? Whether I know this is can be a very controversial thing.
I like to use a combination of pork lard and leaf lard pork lard and butter.
Oh yum.
So,
sounds good.
Yeah, absolutely. Leaf lard would be the kidney area of the pig's fat and butter combination. So yeah, it's my classic old school recipe. It makes for the best flaky crust. We also have now started doing vegan pies, too.
Oh, this is delicious. Okay, I'm having the peanut butter. It's just, this is blueberry. These are blueberries, it's not grape jelly.
It's blueberry jam from Ellis Family Farms.
Wow. So this is blueberry on top of peanut butter, but it's kind of creamy, so it's not just like a peanut butter. Wow, this is delicious.
Yeah, it's a peanut butter custard.
Now, for you, do you have a preference for lard in your crust, or do you try to do vegetarian?
I really love butter.
You think butter is okay.
I like lard as well. And back in the day, before we got super busy, we were going to have a lard crust and a butter crust. But I just imagined what would happen if we mixed those up.
Oh, right. That would be a big issue.
We
so you went with
customers.
Just straight butter.
Yes.
Do you, Kate, do you have tips for crust for home bakers in terms of...
I just say keep it cool. Keep it cool in the kitchen. Keep everything cool on your ingredients when you're working. Try not to get your hands too much. I use a food processor because I make about 16 to 20 doughs every morning, so I work quickly. If you're doing it from scratch with a pastry cutter, try not to get your hands too much into it because your hands are going to warm up the process. And I keep my lard, my butter in the freezer also, and my water to just about the point where it's just kind of getting too cold. Then I kind of work with that. So everything cold. And everything chill. That's the point. Work quickly.
Paula, as I'm about to bite, this is pear.
It's pear fig with walnut crumble.
And what's your thoughts on fresh fruit versus this time of year? What do you do with fresh fruit, frozen fruit? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, we always use fresh fruit. The figs in there are dried, and we cook them in apple cider. But we bake seasonally, so we get most of our produce from local farmers, so we stick with the fresh fruit.
I love that this isn't too sweet, because you'd think it would be a little sweet, but you've got a really nice balance here.
Good.
And then what are your thoughts for home cooks with fruit and sugar, added sugar? Do you feel like the fruit's going to always kind of take that place?
I think you're probably always going to need a little bit of sugar, but it's important to be flexible enough to adjust it. We end up adjusting our recipes, you know, all season long. That a blueberry in June is not going to taste like a blueberry in August.
Wow. And then we just have about a minute left, but I feel like I should ask if there's always room for pie, because we haven't talked about savory pies.
Yes.
Paula, what's your favorite savory pie?
Oh my gosh. Chicken pot pie is amazing and super comforting, and that's our most popular one. My favorite one right now is the pork apple sage.
Pork apple sage.
Yes. Yeah.
Kate, what about you? Do you all do savory pies at your pie shop?
Oh, yeah. I do a lot of shepherd's pies, steak and Guinness. That's the Irish in me. I make a lot of kind of lamb shepherds and steak and Guinness and chicken pot pie right up there. It's one of our best sellers also.
Well, thanks to both of you as we celebrate Pi Day. I love that we haven't talked about math or science tech. No, we haven't done any STEM conversation, but we have been eating great pie. I want to thank Kate Sullivan. She's the owner of Kate's Pie Shop in Rockford. Paula Haney, owner of Hoosier Mama Pie Company. They've got locations in Chicago and Evanston. Ladies, happy Pi Day. Thanks for being here with me.
Happy Pi Day.
You.
Thanks for listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We spoke earlier in the hour about Governor Rauner's decision to veto a bill that requires gun dealers to get a state license. Many legislators and citizens across the state were hoping for a different outcome, especially for some of our younger residents, those in high school. These are the activists leading the fight for what they're calling #GunControlNow. And so today, 1 month after 17 people were killed in a mass shooting in Florida at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, students across the country have been participating in school walkouts, demanding gun control legislation at federal and state levels. Their rallying cry is never again. Here in Illinois, schools chose to have 17 minutes of silence to memorialize the 17 victims of the Parkland shooting. Legislators in Springfield, as we also heard, did a walkout at the state capitol this morning to show solidarity with these young people. If you have thoughts on the issue, you can give us a call. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. Joining me now from our Urbana studio is Salma El-Nagar. She's a sophomore at University High School in Urbana. She and her classmates walked out of class at 10 a.m. this morning. Hi, Salma. Welcome back to the 21st.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
So you just finished your walkout about an hour ago. How are you feeling?
So we stood outside for like 17 minutes in complete silence. So afterwards, when we went into the building, there was still kind of like that silent, like, feel like everyone was going in kind of silent, and even in class we were like still like in that kind of mode, because when you were standing out there for like 17 minutes in silence, you think about a lot of things, and people had posters up and everything saying like, don't forget their names, the 17 lives that were lost during the massacre.
What did you think about Salma?
So for me personally, so there were a couple people who had posters up, and they, on the posters, there were the names of the 17 lives that were lost. And so I was like thinking like, wow, that literally could be like people standing next to me. Like, if this issue does not get resolved, if we do not have gun reform or gun control laws, those 17 lives that were lost could easily be people in my school that their lives could be lost because of gun control. So it's kind of like a reality check of how serious and important this issue is.
When we spoke to you last month, you were thinking about the preparations for this. Did you get the turnout you were hoping for? How many students participated at Uni High in Urbana?
A lot, actually, way more than I expected, since we had a memorial walkout, and we did have a lot of issues with planning because some people weren't like, they're a little like the memorial, they didn't feel like their voices were being heard or everything, but a lot of people, like a lot more, showed up. Like, the courtyard was filled, and a lot of staff also participated as well.
And how did you coordinate with your school administration? Did you find that the student teachers and administrators were supportive of what you were planning?
Yeah, they were really supportive, surprisingly. They completely support what we're doing, and they're also like respecting the fact that they can't really be involved in these events, since it is a student of like organized events. But they're completely supportive, and we haven't there aren't really any repercussions as of now, but we don't know yet.
Right. Salma, you said this is a student-led event. Who helped organize this with you? Did you have older adults who helped you, or how did you do this?
No, we didn't have any adults help us. We had older students. Like, I was working with a junior and a senior, and several other, like, juniors and sophomores as well. And we worked together as a group, but there was no adult, like, involvement or supervision whatsoever.
Salma, as we heard at the beginning of our show, Governor Rauner just vetoed a bill that would have required gun dealers to get a license from the state. How do you feel about the changes that have been made or not made so far?
It's really frustrating that people aren't seeing how damaging this event was, and how all school shootings, or any shooting in general, like the one that recently happened this summer in Vegas, I don't understand how they are not getting the fact that this is important. Like, there has to be control on guns. Like, we have laws for alcohol and drugs and other things, but we can't have any laws that restrict us from guns or assault rifles. Like, this is like dangerous. These things are dangerous. These things instantly kill people, instantly hurt other people, they endanger other people. And the fact that we're not getting that reciprocated and having like laws and everything is really, really frustrating.
That's Salma Elnogar. She's 16. She's a sophomore at Urbana's University High School. I wanted to bring someone else into the conversation as well. Ryan Jansen's on the line from Oak Park. He's a senior at Oak Park and River Forest High School. He organized not just a walkout that he... There was a walkout that happened in late February. He helped organize today's walkout as well. Hey, Ryan, welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So, Ryan, you all had 17 minutes of silence. You also had a rally. Can you tell us a little bit more about it?
So, yeah, like you said, we had a 17-minute march that was in silence, and then we met at the football field, and we were standing in silence for 5 minutes. And then after 17 minutes, we had two student speeches. Two seniors gave speeches regarding, their take on gun control and gun violence and expanding the message to go beyond just school shootings and mass shootings, but to every single day, the victims of gun violence that we see all around us. You know, 96 people perish every day in gun violence. So we made sure to expand the message to include those victims as well.
And Ryan, what about you? Did you coordinate this with the principal at Oak Park and River Forest High School? Mm-hmm. Did you have teachers who walked out with you? How did that happen?
So, I mean, most of the logistics and the planning was done with students. We had a core group of 12 to 20 kids who were always dedicated in thinking and planning. But we did do a lot of coordination with the administration to make sure that, you know, everything would run smoothly. The principal was involved. He was as helpful as he could. You know, obviously there's legal restrictions of how far he could support us, but he made sure to accommodate the march and accommodate students. Teachers who did not have students in their classroom first period were allowed to march. So not every teacher could, but there were some teachers that did march and some security guards and some other faculty that marched as well. So it really was a lot of the school, and it was great to see all people in this building come together, because obviously school shootings affect everybody in the building.
So, Ryan, I know you've got a pretty big school. How many people would you say were out there this morning?
You know, it's hard to say. I think it's definitely bigger than it was in February, because there was a lot more people were a lot more aware of the walkout. I would say at least 1,000, at least 1,000 kids. I wouldn't be surprised if it was 1,500. Don't quote me on that, but I would say it'd be in between 1,000 and 1,500.
And remind us, how big is the student population at Oak Park River Forest High School, Ryan?
It's about 3,000 kids.
About 3,000 kids. Selma, Ryan was just talking about how there seems to be more awareness now. Do you feel like among the student body at Uni High in Urbana, there is a lot more conversation about this now than there was even a month ago?
Yeah, definitely. I feel people are like way more aware, because there is a lot of, like, we have a current events club that constantly talks about like gun reform and these walkouts and everything to inform people. So yeah, like a month ago, there was like a few people, like when I would talk to, like, do you guys know about the walkout? They wouldn't know about it. But now everyone knows about, everyone knew about 314, and now everyone knows about 420. So yeah, I feel like people are a lot more aware.
So, Selma, that's the march that you have planned for. Is that also a march that's planned for April 20th?
For April 20th, we are going to have a march. We're going to be marching around, and we're also going to have an educational workshop. So we plan on having like booths that talk about gun reform, how to write letters to Congress or your representatives, that kind of to inform people as well, like what is the gun like law situation in Illinois. And we're also going to be marching around as far as that's planned. Yeah.
Right. That's the anniversary of Columbine. Ryan, are you all planning events for April 20th as well?
Yes, we are. And because it's a full day walkout, you know, it's not just for 17 minutes, we are trying to make it a bigger event. So I know that we are in talks with other western suburb schools and north suburb schools and schools in the city itself. And right now we hope that we can get all students in Grant Park or Millennium Park and have a large demonstration in the city to kind of get all these students in the area in one place and have a huge rally there. But yes, we're working on plans.
And so that you're planning to be out for the whole day, correct, Ryan, on the 20th
yeah.
of April? Selma, and it sounds like you're planning to do that as well.
Yeah, it's going to start at 10, and it's going to end at the end of our school day. So it's about 6 hours.
Ryan, for you said about half the school walked out. Are you having conversations with some of your other students who maybe disagree with you guys? Have you heard from people who think this is too much or that we shouldn't be doing? Like Governor, I'm just thinking of what Governor Rauner said yesterday when he vetoed the licensing bill registration. He said it was onerous and that we should be focusing on mental health support services and other issues in that area. Are you hearing that from young people? Like, No, but I was just going to say other high school students.
In Oak Park, we're a pretty liberal community, so there's not many people saying those things. There are some. There are some people that don't think that a walkout is necessarily constructive. But even those people, a lot of them disagree with Rauner and his veto, which is interesting. There doesn't seem to be a lot of youth support at all regarding Rauner's veto. But in terms of just generally gun control, there are some students who think that banning bump stocks or banning assault rifles or raising the age to buy a firearm aren't necessarily constructive. And that's actually, I think it's good that they're speaking out, because right now I've noticed with the student body a good dialogue taking place and students kind of discussing with one another different perspectives and kind of becoming more sophisticated in their approach to this topic. And, there's been a dialogue and more awareness is coming out of that discussion.
Selma, what about you? Are you having conversations with some other students at Uni High who might disagree with you?
There aren't people, I haven't talked to anyone that necessarily disagrees with the walkout or anything, but I have talked to people who disagree with how the walkout should be organized or what it should represent, that sort of thing. Like, we did have a lot of disagreement with today's walkout, whether it should be a protest or whether it should be a memorial, and some people didn't feel comfortable with it just being a memorial. So we did have a lot of discussion with that, but it's not, I feel like people aren't necessarily against gun reform or the walkout or anything. They're just against what it represents or what.
Right, how you're protesting. Yeah. It sounds like. How did you come to an agreement about it, Selma?
So what had happened is last minute some people wanted to do a die-in for today's memorial walkout, and some people didn't feel comfortable with that. Like, they felt like it wasn't a good idea to have a die-in during a memorial. Some people felt that that is a good way to commemorate the lives that were lost. And so we decided on a compromise, but it ended up no one did the die-in. Everyone just participated in the memorial, so that was interesting.
Yeah, so you guys, it sounds like you guys are working among yourselves to figure out what you're going to do next. Selma, for you all, you're focusing on April 20th. Ryan, I imagine same for you. Is that sort of the next thing that you all have planned, Ryan?
Well, we're definitely having our sights on April 20th, but we're trying to get a lot of students aware and hopefully get them committed to going to the March for Our Lives in Chicago on March 24th, next Saturday. It's the first Saturday of spring break, so we're hoping that we can get enough people home from break to go in March in downtown Chicago for the whole day.
Selma, what about you? I don't know if you're planning on attending that march or what's next for you all.
Yeah, for March 24th, a bunch of students from all the schools in the district, like Central, Centennial, Urbana, and other schools, were all working together in the march for. We're working with Moms Demand Action for the march on March 24th. So all the schools are participating and organizing that event. It's not just us, but all students who want to organize or who are involved with this march. We've been having meetings twice a week for the march on the 24th, but there is adult, we're working with Moms Demand Action to make it go more smoothly.
So you're going to be participating in that, heading up to Chicago for that. I want to thank Selma Elnogar. She's a sophomore at University High. And Ryan Jansen, he's a senior at Oak Park and River Forest High School, explaining a little bit more about their walkout today. Thanks for being with me, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
That's all the time we have for today. On Friday, we're going to be continuing our series of conversations commemorating our state's bicentennial. We're going to be talking Illinois movies with folks from the Lincoln Library. They put out an online poll. Blues Brothers overtook Ferris Bueller and came out on top. What about you? What's your favorite movie set in Illinois? My Best Friend's Wedding comes to mind. Leave us a voicemail at 217-300-2121. That's 217-300-2121. Or you can email us, talk@21stshow.org. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Thanks for listening. Have a good day.